The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So, we're going to do another reflection. And this time I'd like us to do it as in small groups. And to lead up to it, I'll do a short, maybe 3 or 4 or 5 minute little sitting where I'll introduce the question, and then you explore it quietly on your own for a few couple of minutes, and then we'll go into the groups of 5 or 6, and then you can explore it further there in your group. And it has to do, it's an exploration of anger and some aspects of anger. So why don't you just close your eyes? It doesn't have to be, it's not going to be long, so just... Perhaps taking a few deep breaths and clearing out what's happened so far. Coming back to some sense of here and now presence. So the reflection has to do with anger, and there are many kinds of anger, many forms, manifestations of anger. And sometimes it's very clear, really obvious, that an element of the anger is hostility. There's some kind of hostility or ill will in the anger, sometimes. Have you ever had any experience of anger where it was clear to you that there was no hostility, no ill will in the anger? Have you ever had the experience of anger that had no hostility, no ill will? Perhaps it took the form of intense displeasure about something. Maybe it came together with a very strong sense of no. But there was no hostility. No ill will, no wishing injury or harm in anyone. No anger at someone. So the reflection to explore is, what's the difference between anger that has hostility as part of it and anger that does not? How is it experienced differently? How does it feel differently? How does it manifest differently? How is it expressed differently? Okay, so you can take a deep breath or two and so is there anger without hostility, without the ill will? And I think different people have different opinions about that. And if there is a difference between, if there is anger without hostility, ill will, how is that different than anger that's with hostility? How's it experienced differently? How's it felt differently? How does it show up differently? How are the expressions different from each other? When there's hostility together with the anger, how does that, what does that do to the anger, your relationship to anger? So that's the reflection, the difference between anger with and without hostility. Or if you don't know, if you don't recognize anger without hostility, that's also useful just to reflect on that and talk about that. And what I had in mind was that you go into groups of 5 to 6 people, sit in a circle, and just go around the circle and explore your reflections about this topic of the connection of hostility and anger, and what's anger is like when it has hostility as part of it, and what's anger like when it doesn't, and what's the contrast between those two different modes of being angry. Does that make sense? Any questions? So probably we'll do about 20 minutes and going around and discussing it in your group, and we'll see, you know, what direction, how your conversation evolves. It's good to let it evolve, but if it evolves too far away from the primary thing, maybe someone will bring it back and say, oh, you know, this has been nice, but let's remember the original questions. And so why don't you form little groups of 5 or 6 people and maybe spread out. You're welcome to go in the conference room or the outer hall, so wherever you want to sit. Okay, thank you so much. And there's a variety of things that I'd like to hear back from you about, just how it was. But in particular, if someone would care to share a little bit, if you learned anything in that discussion that you didn't know before you had the discussion, did something come out for you, or some surprise, or something new, perspective?
On already? Great. A couple of things. One is, it seems new to me to consider how compassion can be going on at the same time as anger. Mm. That, for instance, I can feel anger at my mother for things that she did, that I can also, at the same time, I can see where those things were coming from, but it doesn't necessarily make the anger go away, but it doesn't feel as if there's any real hostility going on. Although that's still a question mark. The other thing is, when I can get in touch with the fear that may be going on underneath the anger, fear of being criticized and found wanting or something like that, then and that'll kind of cut short my story. It's like free story.
Great.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And it just feels like energy then more than something directed at somebody.
Thank you very much.
One of the things that came out in our discussion is that there can be going through the motions of anger. In other words, speaking in a loud tone of voice that resembles anger, but you know, using that as a tool, but that's not really anger. And certainly, there's no ill will associated with that because you're it's premeditated and you're just using it as a tool. And so we decided that that really was not anger. We also thought that a lot of the time when there is anger, there's a sense of vulnerability or a sense of fear. But there was one person in our group who had experienced anger without any ill will. But there was fear certainly associated with it.
Mm-hmm. Great. Thank you. A significant moment of with anger with me was when I was at the kitchen at Tassajara, which was a bit of a pressure cooker kind of place to be working. And I think I said something to a coworker. I was the kitchen manager, so maybe I said something, and it was inappropriate. And he turned to me with the clearest expression or example I've ever had of white anger. And he turned to me and with great powers, you know, angry powers, said, "Don't ever say that again." And that was okay. He said that. It got my attention for sure. But what really got my attention was as soon as he finished saying that, his anger was gone. There was nothing left. And that really, wow. Anybody else like to share a little bit from what happened there? I wasn't privy to the conversations, and just, but mostly personally, how it was for you personally, as opposed to reporting from the group.
I've been having trouble getting back to something other than hostility, and I think it came down to that both Bobby and I felt that we never really had the training on how to come back strong without it being anger, without it being hostility, to really stand up and take a position and really speak it out clearly. And I'm just realizing that we had very little training, so that there was either, if you're going to protect yourself, which what I experienced, I shared it, just it was that behind the anger is a hurt. And behind that, or maybe on top of that, is a fear that I'm going to get hurt again. So it's protective. I'm protecting myself. But if you only know one way to be protective, and it involves the mobilization of the anger, you're not well trained, but it's on or off, essentially. And I just realized that. So what we feel like we've been working at in our marriage is, I'd rather fight than switch. But we don't know how to fight. We're messy fighters because we've never been trained how to just be out there and be strong and convincing and take a stand without coming across with all the motivation and the power of the anger.
Beautiful. Thank you.
So trying to work on that.
One of the things I'm very fond of is when I can be in disagreement with someone, passionate disagreement about something, and something has to be solved, or you know, it's not like we're gonna, and we hang in there, and we're strongly disagreeing with each other, but we don't give in. We don't like say okay you're right, or you know, or I'm right, and if you're not gonna listen to me, I'm out of here, or this is too much. But just hang in there with the disagreement and kind of going back and forth. With the idea, this is my idea, is if we hang in there with the energy, the creative energy of all that, that perhaps a third option can come up that I never could have imagined if I, you know, if I got my way or if I ran away, or but somehow staying in it and a balanced, without hostility, without criticism, without, you know, holding a position, you know, too tightly, but just kind of staying in there. Let's kind of go back and forth. And then some new possibility. So it might be that you both have to switch. You know, it isn't like one or the other. It's a new, something new might come.
I just think there's so much to be said. I hate to have people not say anything. We also decided that a lot of anger is more like a knee-jerk reaction. You know, it's just an instantaneous thing. And that in those situations, there really is not ill will. That as your example with the guy just coming right back to you with, you know, one short sentence and then it was gone, you know, that for a lot of, most of the time, what we call anger, that's what's going on. Whereas there's another type of anger that lasts for years and years and brews inside of you and really, you know, really destroys you, eats you up from the inside out.
Great, thank you.
I learned something from this group, because when you first said anger without hostility, I thought, if there's no hostility, it isn't anger. And I had to think about it for a while, and I realized that the only time I'm angry without hostility is toward my children, or children in general, or animals, that you can be angry without ever wanting them any harm. Mm-hmm. And then I found out that some of my partners in the group felt just the opposite, that there is no hostility in anger unless it is political, say, or removed, you know, not a personal thing, that you can be angry at a situation or people who are making other people suffer, but not a personal thing. So I learned that these things can, that there's such a mixture, that anger is such a complicated emotion.
Yes.
And for everybody, there's different things feeding into it, like fear, like Elaine said, and these things. Mm-hmm. So it was very enlightening to listen to everybody.
Thank you. I think it's best to consider anger as a big umbrella term under which many, many different things can be held or seen. And the reason it's important to see that is that so many people have a strong tendency to see anger as one thing, and then they have very strong opinions about that their idea of anger. And other people understand the word very differently. And so you have to kind of, before discussing it, you almost have to tease apart what they mean before butting heads about.
To me, anger seems to emanate from a general response, but I'm surprised that there's so many. It's such how we express whatever is beyond the knee-jerk response is such a learned thing. We don't. You either learn it from our parents, or we learn it from our partners, or we learn it from society. That there's a variety of different choices one can make, obviously, but we never learn how to, or many of us don't know that there are choices to make, and we just get caught up in the moment, and it becomes an automatic mm-hmm. response.
Mm-hmm. Great, thank you.
We were talking in our group, and I was wondering, I know in the Tibetan tradition, there are actually wrathful deities. And I was wondering if there's anything analogous in the Theravadan tradition.
Nothing comes to mind. Theravadin Buddhism doesn't have kind of deity practices. And Theravadin Buddhism, the basic idea about the deities is that you feel a bit sorry for them. And, you know, it's pretty good to be a deity, but, you know, it's not quite. But is there something something like that place for wrath? And you know, question is, what is these wrathful deities? And in Zen temples, they have sometimes they have these wrathful guardian deities or guardians, kings, in front of the temples. You know, and they have those terrible gnarling faces, and they snort. You know, you almost don't want to walk by. And they're to protect the monastery, and you know, hopefully there's no hostility there. They're just the protectors, the very adamant protectors. So in Theravadin Buddhism, I don't know the answer for that. So one more, John.
Well, I guess that's maybe what I. Another question about anger is obviously in the series of the hindrances, and you're saying in English to use anger as an umbrella term, and you know I found it very useful to think about anger without hostility and sort of beneficial anger and all this sort of stuff on a really personal level this morning. And I guess I would. You know, I guess ask from the Theravadin sort of, or is there identified? You know, I think of it as you should root out anger, you know, and this sort of stuff, and it clouds concentration and mindfulness. But is there an understanding of this force within that, or if we're talking about positive uses for anger or natural existence of anger in a neutral way, or? Is there identified in the tradition that aspect of energy? Or
well, a few things maybe to say in response is that what makes a hindrance is our preoccupation with it. So basically, anything could be a hindrance if we're preoccupied by it. So even compassion can be a hindrance if we're caught by it and preoccupied by it. In the classic list of the five hindrances, anger is not listed in it. But what's listed is aversion or ill will. The word is dosa. For many people, anger is so closely connected to aversion or to ill will, it felt like it was important today to kind of explore anger. And then... And I was going to talk more about this in the afternoon, but since you asked, say it this way: there's English, and then there's Buddhist English, and you have to know which language is being spoken. Otherwise, there's a confusion of terms. So, you know, for example, in Buddhist English, attachment is really bad. Basically, something you want to be free of. It's a cause of suffering. But there's an organization here in the Bay Area called I think it's called Bay Area Attachment Parenting, which is about how useful it is for parents and new babies to have some kind of healthy bonding. They call that healthy bonding attachment. So in Buddhist English, we're not talking about that kind of attachment. We're talking about clinging and grasping when we talk about attachment. So in Buddhist English, anger is, I think it's best to see it that if a Buddhist, we're using Buddhist English, anger always has hostility as part of it. And the word dosa means ill will. It means a desire to cause injury, a desire for harm for someone. And then the open question, which I raise, is it appropriate to use the word anger for some kind of emotional or strong emotional response or motivation, which does not have hostility within it. And your question is about the Theravada tradition. So in Theravada, the word that's translated often as anger, clearly in that language, has the connotation of hostility as part of it. Is there something else? Is another word in Pali that could be this hostility-free anger? I don't know of any. But if you read the suttas, some of the ways that very occasionally, the way that the Buddha behaves seems a little, seems a bit strong. is he showing a strong displeasure? Is he saying no? Is he setting boundaries in a very powerful way that some people realize, oh, is the Buddha angry here? Is he angry in the Buddhist English sense of it, or is he English in the English sense of it? And
is there a particular example of that you could?
I would have to go back to the Majjhima and go back and find it. But
what about Majjhima and the 20, where the five ways of dealing with obsessive thinking, and the fifth one is like this really intense. You grind your teeth and jaw and beat the hell out of them. So that's an example.
So some people would say, some people are horrified by that example. And it seems like maybe that's something. So.
Also, how he is with his son.
Yeah, with Rahula.
He seems stern.
So how the Buddha is with his son, he seems stern to his son. So is sternness, some people see sternness as a form of anger, is there hostility or is there not? So these are big questions and areas of exploration, and I just want to open this up, partly to put it so you have a question mark around your own experience of anger, so you're willing to look at it more carefully, tease it apart more, and try to understand better what's going on. To end this morning, before we take a break, just for maybe a couple of minutes, close your eyes for a little bit. Breathe mindfully. And in some very open way, allowing way, check in with yourself. How are you after this morning of exploration? We're about to take an hour's lunch break, and as you consider what you'll do for that hour, what do you think is best for you? How would you best use that time? Would it be best for you to stay with some of these reflections on your own and go for a walk, or it'd be nicest for you to actually just kind of put it all aside and just kind of talk with some of your fellows here during lunch? Take an hour. So we'll start again here at 1:15, and few things is that there are tables. We'll bring out